Okay, I believe we're live. Okay, today we don't have any music because Joe is not here. It's me, Fizzy, talking shit with two, what's the word, recent contributors, Harry and Amantle. Got a lot to talk about. Yeah, what?
We need different names.
Well, do you want nicknames?
Yeah, all right, eventually we'll get
there.
Viewers for any nicknames.
Okay, well, we've just started. It took a while. I'll get in touch. That could be a question we put on the board, shall we? Any nicknames? But right, obviously, the main thing we're going to talk about is the game yesterday.
Yeah.
So, Amantle, can start us off. Yes.
So, I'm going to say something which I think is slightly, might be controversial to some people. I think the game yesterday one of the best performances I've seen in a long, long time. I can't put a time frame on that time, but one of the best performances, because we may not have been riveting throughout the whole performance, but we were dangerous and we were better than Wolves, who are a good, good team, away from home, missing Tomiyasu and obviously having a long break from playing, and we were comfortable. We were controlled. We controlled the game fantastic in midfield. Our defence was strong, resilient, no threat. And up front, we had threat. Saka was on his game. Martinelli was on it as well. The only missing piece was up front. So again, that performance here was the one that gave me a lot of confidence in terms of moving forward.
I'm going to add to that, which I agree with totally. But reading the comments at the end of the game, who's the Wolves manager? What's his name?
Bruno Lage.
That's it.
Lage. Weird face, isn't it?
Yeah. To the side. Weird name. Weird
young
face.
Man. Young man.
Weird bloke. He said...
James the Young.
I didn't watch the game, but I saw the highlights. But he said that Wolves dominated. They were the better team. And I looked at and they were extended highlights, so I saw the majority of it, and I was like, "That's absolute shit."
Yeah, no,
absolute
I don't. Shit. I watched it as well. Yeah,
better team first half.
A couple of crosses where they looked a little bit dangerous, and that was it.
And yeah, obviously down to 10 men, it's a different game. But certainly before the sending off,
we were the better team.
Yeah, we were the better team.
We controlled the game. We're playing in gear three.
Yeah, we were. And I think it was a case, and I think part of the reason why we played in gear three was because we'd had such a long period of time off. I thought there were moments we looked dangerous. There were moments we played good football. But I'll tell you what, it was a case of, defensively, I agree with you there, Emmanuel. Defensively, they didn't look like scoring.
Controlled.
Yeah, controlled. And, we talked about this before the podcast, is how we set up our shape, how we set up. When you think our goalkeeper, our two centre-halves and our two holding midfielders, they are incredibly effective at the minute doing what they do.
What did we say? I said one of the primary reasons is that we have got the most, apart from Liverpool, we have the most athletic back line in the Premier League. Mm. We can run with people, we can press with them, we can drop if necessary. We've got people that have got brains in terms of Ben White, Tomiyasu, Tierney, and a little bit to the degree, Gabriel. But we've got all in terms of back line. I watch Liverpool play and I see they're like your template, right? They've got all players you can run, press, play on the ball, ping the ball, 50 yards, 60 yards.
Defenders,
they're perfect for you because you can do whatever. You can sit back if necessary because Van Dijk and Matic will hit the ball, or you can press up. And I think that's where we're working to. I think we're 1 year away of Tomiyasu, Tierney, Gabriel and White. Another year together, next year, again.
Yeah.
Solid, stable. I'm calm now. I remember the days when we had like Mustafi and Socrates and Gabriel Paulista in defence. My heart would be pounding because like, I'm like...
Sylvester.
I see the goal at any moment. But now, like when people attacked yesterday, the first half, I was so confident. I was like,
how we play with Xhaka and Partey
in front of them.
In front of them, it means that most of the goals that we concede are going to come from the side. Mm. We're not going to come through the middle. Whereas back to Mustafi, the midfielders that we had, the defenders, they all come through the middle. You could see people just storming through the middle.
Gianni Ceballos.
Just to add to that, I totally agree with exactly everything you said again. But I think in particular, out of that back four plus Ramsdale, it's Gabriel and White.
Tony White,
it's the core, isn't it?
You could have Tierney, or you could have Suarez, or you could have Tomiyasu and...
Yesterday, Cedric.
Suarez played very well.
He
grew into that game.
Good
delivery.
You could swap those four around to some degree. Sure, you'd probably want Tierney and Tomiyasu as your starting...
But you can get away with Cedric and Suarez.
You get away with them, but I think most importantly is that and again, it's been mentioned as the axis of Ramsdale, Gabriel, and White.
We don't see many goals when
those three. I think if you look at the stats as well,
it's 11 clean sheets in 19 ridiculous. Games.
It's ridiculous.
Second best or third best defense. Yeah, and I think that's something worth mentioning as well. Wolves, while they had a very good defense, had one of the worst attacks coming into that game, and I think it was Arsenal went, well, okay, you don't have a great attack, you're not gonna put the balls in. You know, you put balls in from the side, and when Martinelli got sent off, and we can discuss that in a bit, holding came on, and it was like, right, five at the back.
Do you not Wolves remind me of that period? There's a period in Arsenal history not long ago where we were like that. We had great technical players, but there was no punch. And Wolves have got that. The Wolves are like that. They've got great build-up play. Lots of passing, good in the midfield.
Oh, the amount of crosses that went over their man.
They get into that position and there's nothing there. I think there's a period when we had Iwobi and whatnot. There's nothing in the end. We kind of looked at it, and again, it's the maturity of the club, the team, the development. They're like, listen, we've got a goal. We don't need to redo anything else. We can sit back, we can defend, and we can counter-attack because you're not really going to hurt us. Yeah. We back our defence and our keeper to keep you up.
And I think the sending off, obviously, we'd rather have 11 men.
We're getting used to it now.
Yeah.
I saw something on Twitter saying that Arteta randomly generates a player to get sent off so he can bang out the 5-3-1 block in the second half because he loves doing that.
He does, but it works, doesn't it?
It works every time. 5-3-1. It works
against Liverpool. Bosh.
So what I thought was interesting is Ruben Neves coming out at the end of that game going, oh, really pissed off that fucking Arsenal celebrated like they won the World Cup. Well, first of all, if you'd been down to 10 men for that length of time and you just fucking hammered away everything that was thrown at you.
Away at Arsenal.
You too would be fucking celebrating, not like you won the World Cup, but you would fucking be like, yeah, this is decent. Especially after the fucking piss poor performance at Burnley. But actually, fuck you. This is like the millionth time we've had a man sent off, and now we've actually fucking done you with 10 men. You suck a dick.
But I think it's a compliment to Wolves to a certain extent.
No, it is,
because if Wolves had won, they would have gone above us in the league. So they're no mugs, and as well, I think it's also as well, it's a testament to where we are as a squad. Like, this is a unified team, and when you win 1-0 away from home against a top 10 team with 10 men. Of course you're going to celebrate.
You want that though. You want them to be celebrating a clean sheet. You want them to be happy about it.
We've seen them when we've lost 5-0 to Liverpool, Chelsea, and they're all fucking hugging each other at the end.
Exchanging shirts.
And you're like, you should be furious. I'm furious. This has ruined my weekend. And so we can't have it both ways. We can't go, well, you know, they celebrate. That was a great result.
Ruben Neves was only saying that because he's pissed that they lost, isn't it?
He's bitching,
isn't he?
I like that though.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the shithousery that we have.
It's testament
to where we are. Like, again, if you go on Twitter now, fans are starting to, and people are starting to make jibes at our players. Like, there was a post about Ramsdale diving for a shot that didn't come in. And I was like, that's good. They're rattled. They care. They care because they see that, we are significant to a degree. We're relevant again. And that's why people are, let's pick a fucking Ramsdale. Oh, Ben White slipped. Let's post the video of Ben White slipping. Oh, yeah, because obviously we're relevant now and people are rattled.
I think it's odd, isn't it, that the real top teams like Liverpool and City, those kind of jibes don't happen to those type of teams. It's all
because they're established, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. But it's always those teams that are either have been good and are becoming good again, or are just working their way up, or have shown some promise, or are just fucking massive shit houses. I like to be in that category because that shows improvement. Before, nobody would fucking care that somebody slipped, or it would just be same old Arsenal.
Same old Arsenal.
Oh, fucking yellow, like
soft,
yellow belly, soft, all that shit. Yeah. Now it's like, oh, this he's a cunt because he's done this, blah 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 blah.
I love it.
I fucking live for it.
Oh, Martinelli's dirty. I love it.
Give it to me. I take it all day. I would have a full 11 of absolute shit houses.
We have got more, haven't we?
Yeah. I want a fucking full 11.
We've got more shit houses, and I said to you earlier on, Alex, we've got more athletic people. I said to you, what did I say? I said Ramsdale, Partey, Xhaka, Gabriel and White, you said that basis is great. And I said, what did I say?
Fine.
I said, every single one of them is 6'1" and above, right? Remember the days, I said it to you before, I loved the player because all up towards the end, small guy,
even Fabregas.
Couldn't run. Even Fabregas, but I meant like more towards that period of time we had, just before the Xhaka time, and we had, again, Mustafi, 5'11", Socrates, 6'. Mm. It's fine being 6', if you can run. Ben White's 6'1", yeah. And he can fucking run.
He can sprint, yeah.
Whereas we didn't have athletic players. Now we've got proper players now, man.
Here's a good one. Name all the shithouses in our team right now.
Ben White.
Ramsdale.
And Ramsdale. Gabriel's a sly shithouse.
Yeah, he's going to be a
shithouse. The only one that isn't a shithouse in the back four is Tomiyasu.
Yeah.
Tierney, I think, is fucking next level shit. Tierney reminds me of a Robertson shithouse.
Ramsdale's a big shithouse as well. Oh, Ben White's a big shithouse. You see that picture after the Minamino miss?
Yeah.
And he's laughing in his face. In midfield, both our centre mids, Shaka's more of an overt shithouse. Yeah. Whereas Partey's more of a subtle shithouse.
But Partey.
Partey's more of a, I'm going to kick your ankle and walk away. No one's going to notice it.
I read a stat. Partey has made 3 fat fouls and got 3 yellow cards. The last 3 yellow cards, he's made 3 fouls. Mm. So whatever he's doing, he's not getting away.
He's not getting away with it. Yeah. But both of them.
Is that shithousery or is that just.
No, he's also he's a shithouse. Deep down, I know him.
Maybe in the future, but I'm not putting.
No, Martinelli's another one as well. He's another shithouse deep down.
I think we have potential shithouses.
He's got arrogance.
We've got potential shithouses.
He's
got
Mini Suarez.
I'm talking about current shithouses. Current fucking players.
Back four, innit?
That will just give you shit.
Or back five, apart from Tammy
Abraham. Smash you in, 2-foot you if you need.
But this is my point. You said shithouses, yeah, great. But then I think Odegaard and Martinelli are ones that will give you shit. They may not be shithouses.
I don't think Odegaard gets bullied.
No, so Odegaard he didn't use like giving people shit.
Yeah.
I think they're not. So we've got our shithouses, but we've got more players that will give you shit. But like Odegaard, like, whereas Ozil back in the day would just joke around and be fuck all.
I think, yeah. I tell you,
whereas Odegaard is constantly chatting. Someone kicked him yesterday. He got up and he was vexed. The ref had to calm him down.
I think that's a fine line between. Players are not just going to fucking roll over like we've had before.
That's what I'm saying. We've done.
So I think we've got a nice mix of those players. I think the whole squad, certainly the starting 11, won't just roll over and get kicked and get punched or, you know, get elbowed and just fucking take it like we used to. But I think there's a nice mix of those players who will actually actively seek out shit. I'm going to fucking nudge you into touch, into the side. I'm going to tread on your toe knowing that's going to fucking hurt. I'm going to hold my hands up and go, I didn't do fuck all. I think it's a very nice mix of those players who, yes, they won't take shit, but we've got those players, Tierney, you know, all the people you've just mentioned, who will actively seek out that shit.
We've got it's our back four. We've got the third best back four in the Premier League.
Yeah, defensively. And
I'd say third/fourth, depending on Chelsea, but I think fullbacks, you could say like are pretty even in terms of Chelsea. I think Reece James is class. I think Chilwell's class. Not as good as Tierney, but I think our centre-backs are better than their centre-backs. That's why I think we're ahead of them. But obviously, Liverpool and Man City have got better back fours than us, but that's it.
I think Liverpool, the attacking.
Yeah, we've got better defenders.
Yeah.
Fucking Trent Alexander-Arnold can't tackle anything. Even in the second leg against Arsenal, Martinelli and... and Saka had him on skates every time they had a go at him.
But it's just that
attacking wise,
and I think City. I like that Cancelo.
Martinelli killed him as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We had City on the ropes. If you think back to that game, New Year's
Day. First half, we had them.
And it was just a brain dead moment from
That's City. Do you see how they celebrated the
game? Yeah, exactly.
Shirts off, buzzing. Rodri's celebration. Yeah. He was into the fans because obviously he realised it was a big.
That was a big victory for them.
When you get battered for fucking 75 of the fucking 90 minutes and you come out winners, you're gonna celebrate. Arteta being X Man City as well.
Arsenal get. I do think Arsenal get a rough rub of the group. So before we move on to the next thing, let's talk about briefly the sending off. Right.
Weird.
We've all played FIFA. Now on FIFA, that would happen. Right. I'm not very good at FIFA. I'll beat you. But whatever. Right. Okay. right. Yeah, if you do two yellow card worthy tackles, right, you get sent off, right? But in real life, I've never seen that happen. And the amount of times I've seen a defender or any player make a yellow card worthy tackle and before the ref gives the yellow card, kick the ball away, and the ref goes, oh, come, yellow. Right? Yeah. One yellow. Right? That's it. I've never seen that happen before. Right? And for that to happen to Arsenal, it does, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, it started to add up.
Martin Oliver again, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. No. Yeah, was it?
Yeah, it was Oliver. Listen, in isolation...
Those were two yellow cards.
In isolation. But the game is not refereed in isolation.
Mm.
He played advantage and then an incident happened, right?
Yeah.
Also... In a game, it's very rare for a player to get two yellow cards in succession. Normally, if a player gets two yellow cards, the second incident is significantly worse than the first incident.
Yeah, and
enough so the referee can't be like, I'll give you a warning. Normally, the referee gives you a warning.
Yeah,
he'll be like, listen, I've booked you already. Now you've committed another foul. The next time you do any sort of infringement,
it's off.
Surely, the referee wants the game to go on with everybody on the pitch. Surely that...
It ruins the spectacle.
Yeah, there has to be an element of that. I'm not saying that that's the overriding feeling for a referee. You've got a referee by the laws of the game, and that's fine. But surely, there has to be an element of judgment and common sense. And like
you say, by the laws of the game, but these are laws that aren't... Yeah, that's, when have we ever seen that happen?
No. The threshold for a red card needs to be higher. Right now, in, I'm not just saying... This is situation is different, but in general... I think people were giving out red cards willingly.
Jamie Oliver giving out red cards.
Referees are rewarding good simulation and good manipulation of the game with red cards. I think red cards, the threshold for red cards is be higher. Because again, it ruins the game. It's a big thing. If Martinelli was to do that 15 minutes, 10 minutes after I'd already been booked.
Absolutely. And
what's it called? Nelson Semedo, 85th minute, was running in on the right wing to put in across. Yeah, great. I get it. Yellow card.
Yes.
But it literally in the same passage of play, without any sort of conversation, heated situation. He's obviously annoyed.
Well, he got put on his arse.
Yeah, he got put on his arse and he was upset about that. And then he kind of like got in the way of the other guy, kind of pushed him a little bit.
Yeah.
Yellow card. But no one's questioning that.
He's a fucking foul throw as well.
But still definitely yellow card. He got in his way. That's a yellow card. No Arsenal fan's going to say he didn't deserve a yellow card.
Yeah.
All we're saying is, where's their integrity? Why are you not conversing with him saying, listen, you've just been booked. You need to calm yourself down, otherwise you get booked again. You played advantage, it's the same sequence of play.
You know as well as I do that he would have not made that second challenge if he'd known he'd
be. You'd have let him run.
Yeah, he would have.
You'd have paced him anyway. You'd have run it, like, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, he was annoyed
with
the previous decision.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to get yellow card anyway because the referee's playing advantage. I'm just going to take him out. Get yellow card, is what it is.
Well, I've been told that I've read that Arsenal are going to appeal, but I suspect.
Shit like that never gets.
Well, because normally with appeals you can only appeal straight reds.
Yeah.
But because it's such a weird of interpretation of the rules, and it is, and for me it's kind of like if you look at the rules, it does say, you know, what he did was fine, but you have to think how it's never been done like that before, and as well like we said, you know, it ruins the spectacle. You know, refs. In my opinion, a good referee, I don't know his name. When you know the referee's name, you know that he wants to be on TV. And I think Ferdinand and a couple of the pundits on PD Sport said it yesterday. Goes, he wants his name to be known.
Mike Riley, Martin Oliver.
Yeah.
They're the two that spring to mind.
Who's the little bald twat?
Mike Riley. He's a cunt.
No. He does a little dance. He's from Liverpool. Tranmere.
Definitely Mike Riley.
Yeah, it's Mike Riley.
Is it Mike Riley?
Yeah. The one who was in the stands with his fucking shirt off. Like,
After Spurs school, isn't it?
Yeah, and I thought that was... He was blonde, Mike Riley.
No.
Skinny.
Google it.
Yeah, I think we need to Google it. Let's go.
Yeah.
All good podcasts have come here. Where's Jamie from the Joe Rogan podcast? Let's get him up. He might be in it.
Mike Riley's a knob.
It's not Mike Riley, though.
Yeah, he's the English ref.
Yeah. He's a little skinny blonde guy.
Mike Riley.
No, Mike Riley's bald.
Yeah, Mike Riley. It's Mike Riley. 100% Mike Riley.
Oh, no, Mike Riley's different to...
No.
No, Mike Riley's the old one.
Yeah, that's Mike.
Oh, no.
That cunt there.
Mike Dean, isn't it?
Mike Dean. There we go. Mike Dean.
Mike Dean's an idiot.
I saw his little dance when Adebayor.
And when Spurs scored, he run like that.
Mike Dean, that's it.
From the Wirral.
But I think the problem with refs, and me and Joe have discussed this before, there's no accountability for refs. There is managers, players have to explain their decisions. They're split-second decision-making. And, managers have to explain why they've played certain players or done certain formations, whatever. But referees, there's no accountability. And I think fans would love to know why. You know, there'd be a lot more understanding of, well, look, you're wrong, but at least I understand why you've
done that. And that's the key. And I think if I was a referee, or, you know, what I would want from referees is similar to rugby, right? Rugby referees, I think, don't always get it right. But there's always a reason for a decision. So as a PE teacher, whenever you're reffing, you're like, right, I've made this decision. This is the reason that I've made the decision. This is what I've seen. It might be wrong, but this is what we're going with. So then both teams go, okay, cool. We don't agree, but all right, I can see why you've come to that decision. And at the end of the game, if the guy goes back and he looks at the TV screen, he goes, oh, that was wrong. To come out and go, do you know what? I thought I saw this. But actually, on reflection, this is what happened. Yes, I got it wrong, but I've justified the reason that I've made this decision. And you know what? You could make a wrong decision fucking once every month, and it wouldn't upset me nowhere near as much, because you've gone, okay, you've justified the reason that you've made the decision. You've clearly seen something during the game, and obviously he's got a different view to everybody else because he's on the fucking pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the only one with that view.
It's live as well.
It's live. It's so quick, as you know. Yeah. And there's influences and all those kind of things. And, you know, you're never going to say, oh, this team influenced me. But there are circumstances, there are things that go on during the game that we're not privy to. They come out and say it. You go, all right, cool. I respect it. I don't agree with it, but I respect the decision. And, you know, and everybody moves on. Whereas they make a decision. There's no explanation. It's clearly wrong. All the cameras, the VAR is, even VAR is wrong sometimes. VAR has muddied the waters further when it should have been the opposite. And then obviously a VAR is a completely different discussion. And you could probably do fucking four or five podcasts on the use of VAR and why it's shit and all that kind of stuff. Well, but for referees, that's my opinion.
I agree. I think what there is they're too protected. And I get it. Like, could I do their job? Probably not. Like, it's very difficult. It's very quick. And, you know, the speed at which they have to make decisions is incredible. And, you know, it's a professional sport. Like, these are professional athletes. This is their career. And so you want the level of officiating to be at a professional standard. And I think it's telling that very few international tournaments have, you know, English refs.
Mm. I think one max.
Yeah, one.
Well, apparently the next World Cup, there's going to be three. There's three English refs in line.
I'm not a big fan of the next World Cup based on a number of reasons. But okay.
Well, you could be Qatar.
Yeah, Qatar is a fucking joke. You changed the season. Yes, human rights. Blah blah blah. Blah. Anyway, how bent it was getting the decision in the first place made Russia look
clean, isn't it?
Yeah, it's shocking. You know, the great footballing nation of Qatar, but. My point was, so the referees, I think they're protected and they're not held accountable. Even if you look at VAR, VAR isn't, if you have a VAR on the decision, it's not what's the right decision. It's, has the ref made a clear and obvious mistake? So they're saying, has the ref made a fucking clanger? Do we need to change? Not, is it a penalty or is it not? So you can foul someone and the they can go, well, the ref didn't see it, so
it's not a clear, obvious error.
Yeah, it's not clear, right? And that they're protecting the refs like that. And you're like, well, hang on a second. It shouldn't be like that at all. It should be, is it a penalty? Mm. Is it a free kick? Is it a goal? Whatever. It's not, has the ref made a mistake? Fuck the ref. It should be what is, yeah, because there are 22 athletes, there's 80,000 fans in the stadium. There's, yeah, whatever, all these fans watching worldwide. Nobody cares if the refs made a mistake. We just care about the right decision for the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the problem is. it's all about focus on protecting the refs.
But if dimlows like us know that that's how VAR should be used,
yeah,
why are these people that are being paid probably extortionate amounts of money,
yeah,
don't come to the same conclusion? How is it actually possible that just fucking, like, you know, well, it's not that we're watching football 24/7. We're just fucking Arsenal fans that,
yeah,
obviously where we're living at the minute, don't always get to fucking see the game. Mm. Might be on at 5 o'clock. We're not watching as much football as we probably would do back at home. But even then, we know that is how VAR is going to be best used. And I think it's public knowledge. I think most football fans would agree that technology is used, should be used in that way. Again, like you said, it shouldn't be, has the ref fucked up or not? It's like, is it right? Is it wrong?
Yeah. Is it right? Is it wrong? Yeah.
It doesn't matter. We all agree, and a lot of fans will do too, that the refs are only human and they can only give what they see.
Yeah.
But if what they've seen is not the correct decision, then someone in Stockley Park or wherever the fuck it is, I don't know where it is, should be like, dude, you got it wrong.
Mm. And tell them that.
Yeah. That's wrong. Not you've made a mistake and it's that's not what should have happened. This is it. Stop the game. Bang.
Yeah.
They're all in communication. I don't think it'd be that hard, but hey, listen, like I said, this is a completely different conversation.
Yeah, it's funny, like with different sports, like you seem to think, like you look at cricket and rugby, which are probably the other two main UK sports, they've pretty much nailed it on the head. I'm sure there were teething problems, there's a few problems in it. But generally,
we don't have
this controversy in
in terms of cricket and rugby, they empower referees. I think now as well, quite a lot of referees and linesmen are giving up, what's the word? When you give up sort of power, because they know that VAR will
sort of.
So like loads of linesmen now are just giving up like offsides and stuff like that, because they know that VAR will sort them out. Whereas rugby and cricket have got the right balance in terms of empowering the referees, but at the same time, willing to be like, listen, mate, Nigel Owens, you made a mistake there. That's not right. I think you should do this. Have a look, and they do it. They're not afraid to go, I'm wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's an ego thing, isn't it?
And football is like, oh, like, too much, yeah, you're right, too much ego, too much protecting themselves is mental.
You watched the game as well. Martinelli just being sent off, wrongly, we could maybe say. But then 2 minutes later, Gabriel played a beautiful through ball to Lacazette.
Like a threat.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
And Henry-esque in terms of how it should have gone.
His body.
Yeah.
Anyone else on the end of that is fucking sorting that away. Yeah.
And as we all know, it went sailing past my post. And supposedly, according to the commentators of my feed that I was watching it on, a few players like dropped their heads and went, fuck, you know. And I certainly thought when it didn't go in, I was like, right, we're going to get a draw out of this game. Now, this leads me on to transfers and the transfer window.
Sorry, just before you go on to that, there was another one where I think it was Saka from the right, square.
Oh, yeah, in the first half. He got it on target.
He had to hit it first time.
Yeah.
It was difficult. Bro. From a striker of him.
Any top class strikers banging out the corner.
That's exactly. I'm saying it's a harder chance than the one that he fucking missed wide of the post. Yeah. He had to hit it first time, but
passed it to keeper.
Yeah, like come on, man.
So I think obviously Lacazette, with the whole Aubameyang situation, we can talk about all of this. I think Arsenal didn't sign. They went for Vlahovic, and I think Vlahovic didn't want to come. And I think the fact that he went to Juventus, I suspect part of it was he wanted to stay in Italy. He wanted to be guaranteed Champions League, which we're not. No better.
Guaranteed goals as well, isn't it?
Guaranteed goals. And maybe there's an element of it's an easier challenge for him. Yeah. It's a league that he knows, absolutely. But I don't think Arsenal should be sort of criticised for going for that sort of player. I think he's the sort of player that we want. Now, Lacazette is not the sort of striker we want for our system. And he's adapted his game. Like, he comes deep. A lot of what he does is he will come deep, and Martinelli and Saka, he'll play those through balls in. If you think back to that Leeds goal he pulls the defenders away from him. But we obviously need someone that can do everything, like an absolute mutant of a number nine, like a Drogba almost, which is why I think we went for Vlahovic. I think Vlahovic is that sort of mould of striker. But, you know, obviously there's that rumour about Isak and...
which will happen.
Yeah, which will it happen or not? Calvert-Lewin.
No, I told Calvert-Lewin. I said to you before, I said to you before the podcast, and I said it to you again. He was in London for a reason. And in my opinion, Arsenal agreed a deal. And it's one of them ones that Arsenal didn't want to play the release course for Real Sociedad. And Real Sociedad, I say, and we're third in the league or whatever. If you want him now, you have to play a release course. Whereas in summer, we can actually negotiate a deal. And I think it's one of them ones where his personal terms and stuff will agree. And it's just wait till summertime. Mm. Arsenal will nurse Nketiah. They'll nurse... Lacazette.
Well, yeah,
and then he was in London for 3 days. Though, he was seen near the Emirates, etc. There's a reason why he was there. I think that will happen. It's one of them ones where I think, like, I think it will happen.
Would you pay?
Would I don't you, think it would be released.
Okay, but let's play devil's advocate and say, okay, fine. In the summer, it's still going to be release course. Real Sociedad will be like, they know they've got a good thing. He's got a release course for a reason. Mm. It's going to be 70 mil. Are you paying 70 mil for it, Isak?
It's a risk.
You're Arteta right now. You are the manager of Arsenal Football Club, right? You are the one that's saying to Edu, this is the guy that I want. I don't give a fuck how much it costs. Mm. I want this guy. Are you paying 70 million? Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind the fucking...
Can I say, I think that each manager has a pinnacle player. Yeah, who they kind of like are sort of like tied to. I think the strike of Arteta is it. And if he thinks Isak is that, because I look back, again, I was looking on Twitter, people saying on Twitter, it was Mane, not Salah, for Kurt Klopp. Because Salah, Mane came in the year before, and I think they spent 40 million on Mane. Mm. And everyone's like, why the fuck are you spending 40 million pounds on Mane? Bearing in mind, this was 6 years ago.
Right? From Southampton.
And everyone's like, why are you spending that's a lot of money for a club? But that's the player that he was tied to, and it worked out. I think Isak will be a risk, but I think he's the player. He's that player for Arteta. Like, if it works out, he's a thing. So I think he might be willing to take that risk. That 7 million. For me, you're asking me, am I going to personally spend that money? I think striker's a bit of a premium. I think he's a better player than Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
I agree.
Think he's a better player than Ivan Toney. I think he's a better player than Ollie Watkins. I think he's a better player than all of them. The only player who I think he's struggling to be a better player of, I think he's a better technical player than Vlahovic, but Vlahovic's a killer. He's a straight up killer. He bangs in goals. But also, I think it's also where he's playing in Sociedad and stuff. He might not be flourishing as much as he is. He's 21 years of age, man. He's 6'4". He's rapid, good technique, good dribbling ability. He's just obviously just missing that clinical edge. So yeah, I'll take the risk.
There's
also the resale value of him.
Yeah, no,
you'll still get 40 million for him.
Sure, he fits the mold of what Arsenal have done in recent past in terms of transfers and stuff and resale value and all that stuff, but. There's a lot of talk at the minute and on social media and blogs and kind of stuff, you know, of the type of player that Arsenal are looking for, or Arteta is looking for, in regards to the, you know, to fit the structure, to fit
how the team plays.
Sure. Yeah. And my only kind of thing with Isak is that, I hope you can see it, you want a big, athletic, you want a mobile Giroud.
Yeah,
and Vlahovic is that guy, right?
Yeah,
Isak isn't that guy?
But he's the one. They're also saying that obviously the main thing people were saying that obviously Arteta wants a big, strong target man. But another thing that people realised recently is that Arteta's been saying that he wants a player who's able to drop into midfield and play to overload the midfield, right?
Yeah.
So this is why some people are thinking Isak would be a better fit than Vlahovic, because Vlahovic is the whole. He wants someone who can hold up the ball up front. Great, Vlahovic.
Playing behind the lines. He
wants to have someone who can do the... Ideally, we want a mix between Aubameyang and Lacazette. We want Lacazette's ability to hold the ball up, to be able to get into midfield, play as a 10. But we also want someone who's got to have a threat going that other way.
Who pushes the back.
Yeah. Whereas Vlahovic is great at holding the ball up, great, but he can't go into midfield and play the ball. Whereas Isak's the other way. He can go in midfield, pick the ball up, play a pass, dribble, 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 dribble. but he hasn't got that ability in terms of the actual end stuff.
I appreciate what you're saying, and
that's why I think it's a bit of a counter. Both of them are.
You might know a bit more than me, but my thing to that is, if that's the case, then why did we not just go for Isak in the first place?
Well, I think it's that he's not a finish.
He's not a finish artist. He's more of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think with Isak, it's kind of like, well, I don't mind paying 50 million for someone. I don't want to pay 75.
In my opinion, I don't think it's any different, in my opinion, in terms of Premier League to slightly different, because obviously Maddison wasn't a Premier League, but it's more of a Maddison Odegaard thing, isn't it? You know, someone who's, in my opinion, who's a proven thing in the Premier League. And who's got more credential, probably costs a little bit more, but you've got Odegaard, who's only been in the Premier League 6 months, didn't really do much, and there's more of a sort of like Trump, like sort of a risk to it, right? Vlahovic is more proven, he's more going to bang goals. Calvert-Lewin's probably more proven, Ivan Toney's more proven. Isak's got more of a risk, but you want to take, sometimes that risk reward works out, man.
My next question is this then, on the Isak thing, is that can Arsenal afford to spend 50 million on a risk?
I think they can, because in my opinion, I think our model is not going to be our striker being a banger. I think we're going to go more Liverpool based, and I think our bangers are going to win. And I think Martinelli and Saka will be the goal getters.
So
I think we're more of a 25 goals, 25 goals, 20 goals sort of thing, more than a Harry Kane, 35 goals, 10-10. You know what I'm saying?
I think
he wants more of a playmaker striker who can do stuff. Facilitate, because again, I think Martinelli in a full season he could bang 20 goals.
Smith Rowe got 9 or 10.
I agree to a certain extent, and I appreciate the things that you're saying, and I agree with the majority of what you said. But based on previous history of Arsenal's transfers, you're looking at £50 million. Now, bear in mind that the reports are that we've got 180 to 200 million to spend in summer. Now, let's imagine that that's true. That's still a quarter of your budget on something or somebody, should I say, that is a huge fucking risk.
Yeah. Now,
all right, the alternatives, and I know strikers at the moment are premium. Calvert-Lewin is probably going to cost you 60, 70 million, especially now Lampard's there. He's going to fucking cost you a bit more.
Jonathan David as well, and Leo's going to cost you about 40, 50 million.
You're going to spend in and around that maybe for a striker anyway, but
I think you want to.
It's a difficult one. Would it not be better, again, just playing devil's advocate, would it not be better to pick up somebody like, I don't know, I can't even think of names. I know that. What have Liverpool paid for Diaz?
50 million.
Okay, so.
But I think.
They can afford to pay for
it. I think we're doing a Jota. Jota was a winger who banged in 10 goals, at Wolves. And Liverpool went, we can make him a striker. There's a risk. We'll spend 45 million.
But they can afford to take that risk, because they're in that position. And if it doesn't work, they've still got...
We're not in a position to buy fucking Haalands, who are sure things.
We're not in a position to get them. No, exactly.
We're going to have to take a risk.
Yeah. But I think with the problem with that is
Ivan Toney and Calvert-Lewin do not move the needle. They do not move the needle. I'm telling you now.
No.
They don't move the needle. For us to get where we want to be, we're going to have to take a risk.
But I think, I'm going to dispute. I agree. At the minute, Calvert-Lewin and Toney do not move the needle, 100%. But I think that this is not the end product of their ability. So I think Arteta, one of his key strengths is how he's developed players.
Yeah.
And like Sterling, we talked about this earlier, didn't we? Sterling fucking loves him. Raheem Sterling absolutely loves Arteta. He's changed him in much better player. So, you look at some of the players that Arteta's taken on. Saka, Martinelli, easily could say Smith Rowe. Yeah, he's improved them. And so I think the argument would be, well, if we signed a Toney or a Calvert-Lewin or even a Isak, he could improve them. Okay, but I think what Arsenal have done is basically gone, well, how much money have we wasted on transfers and wages? We've been incredibly inefficient. And it's taken Arsenal 2 years. Yeah, you look at this. I saw on Twitter, it was a squad photo from when Emery started. And it was like, it's like when murderers, they wipe off the names or whatever. Yeah, they mark over the pictures.
Xhaka.
Yeah. There's about like yeah, three or four then. Like that's
Leno.
Yeah. Who's leaving?
Elneny.
Elneny. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, maybe Holdinho as well.
I think Holdinho.
Do you know what I mean? And so I think Arsenal, we spent how much on that Aubameyang in terms of wages? How much on, and so our model definitely is 21, 22, 23, 24 year old players. I think it's that at the time they just thought like it's not worth the risk.
Well, my counter argument to that is there is no one else. They were saying on all the podcasts, there's a dearth of strikers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chelsea have to spend nearly 100 million to get Lukaku back.
Yeah.
There is no other striker. You're going to have to take Vlahovic is a risk. Mm-hmm. He's banging in 30 goals in foreign tip, but he's a risk. There is no other strikers. Who are you picking up?
He's less of a risk than Isak.
But who are you picking up? That's my question. Mm. Jonathan David, he's banging in goals in Lille. He's a risk.
Mm.
The only other players who are not a risk are, it's basically you're saying, I'm going to take something who's less of a risk, but doesn't have the same sort of potential ability to move the needle in terms of overall.
Well, we don't know, do we? We don't know.
But
on me.
Ability, I know what you're saying, but yeah. I see, I've got my eyes, right? And my eyes tells me that Isak's got better football ability than Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I can see that in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You're a football man. You can look at both of them play mm-hmm. and you can go, one of them might be a good goal scorer, but one of them is clearly a better football player.
Okay, yeah? But how does it fit the system?
Again, how does it fit the system? But I trust the hierarchy, like, okay, it's at this, and they can get it right. How many times did we look at our summer transfer and go, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's worked out.
I think there's no strikers out there, mate.
You're going to have to take a risk.
I think the main problem with this is, it's not that there aren't any strikers out there. I think that there are strikers out there. Don't ask me who they fucking are. But the problem, the main problem is that they're all 50 minutes.
And that's
the risk. The risk isn't, we're going to take this player who we think is going to be great and they might be good and they might not be, but we're going to take a chance. It's that not only are we going to have to take that chance, but it's going to cost us 50 fucking million to find out.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's almost like double risk because yes, they could be great. And in which case the 50 million that you've outlaid isn't, you've won.
Yeah.
But also they could be average and they could be okay.
Yeah.
But then it still doesn't come out as like you've won because you've outlaid 50 so million pounds for it.
Yeah.
They were saying in the news that as well as Isak and Jonathan David and Calvert-Lewin and Tony, we're looking at Victor Osimhen from Napoli. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, I saw that.
62 mutant, blah blah. Napoli paid 75 million for him 2 years ago. In his first season, he got 8 goals at Napoli. They spent 75 million for 8 goals. This year, he's got 22.
Mm.
It's a risk. Mm. There's not that. Do you know what I mean? You've got to take a chance and you've got to take a risk.
Of course, no.
If you're going to take a risk and spend 70 million on a 21-year-old 6'4" rapid striker who can dribble, I'd rather take that risk than spend 50 million on a 25, 26-year-old striker who can do all right.
And if there was ever a chance to take that risk, it's when we reportedly got 200 million to spend.
And we have a nucleus of young players where they can all grow together.
Oh, it's a good squad for any player to join. Mm.
You've got someone on the left of you who's 21, someone on the right of you who's 20, your attacking midfielder is 24. Do you know what I mean? They can grow together. Listen, in an ideal world, if you're spending 70 million, you want a surefire thing. Those days are long gone.
Mm.
If you surefire things are Haaland.
Yes.
They're surefire things, 175 to 200 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get a surefire thing. Yeah. Like, you're not going to get a surefire thing for that money. And I know everyone's saying, there's a risk. He only got 15 goals last season. He's only on 4 goals this season. There's lots of different factors into that. It's a risk, but you've got to look at the potential. You've got to look at what the actual ability of the player. You've got to look at what he could potentially bring. And I'm saying I would rather spend 70 million on a 21-year-old who's a better footballer. You may not have the outlay right now, than spend 50 million on a 6'4" kind of a little bit of a donkey who's all right. That's my opinion.
No, that's right. It depends on. I do think it's obviously what Arteta wants the player to do in the system. So you look at Lacazette now. I don't know about you, but I certainly used to think Lacazette was a predator in terms of his finishing. And yesterday wasn't a shining example of that, I have to admit.
Sex predator.
You say that. Well, Clive, he's not Simon.
Clive said,
the Vision podcast, said a really good thing. He said that obviously Lacazette, everyone thinks Lacazette is a 9, but he's in his best time at Lyon, in general, he played behind another striker. Yeah.
Mm.
He was never the main man.
He banged in 50 goals.
Yeah, but he was playing behind another striker, Buffettini Gomez, who's a 6'4", number nine.
He was never
the number nine.
He's never the man.
We're expecting him to be a nine in the area, Drogba. He's not that. He likes to drop into midfield. He likes to play. And there's a reason why Arteta was
in back.
Arteta had both of them. Had Aubameyang, who's more of a nine sort of player, more than Lacazette. Yeah. And he had Lacazette. And he chose Lacazette more in central than Aubameyang.
Well, Aubameyang couldn't hold up the ball and couldn't do what he wanted to do. And this is what I mean. I think, who's a better striker? Aubameyang.
Yeah.
Right? No arguments there. But Aubameyang couldn't do what Arteta wanted to do.
But why did he pay Smith Rowe in the false nine? Why has he paid Pepe in false nine?
Well, I think he's trying stuff out. Wow. Yeah, there's experiments, isn't there?
No, I knew that Aubameyang was going to be fucked up.
But in my opinion, I think he wants a. I know he's had to spend a lot of time with Pep, but I think he wants a striker who can ball.
Mm.
Again, and they were saying in the podcast, he likes a striker to be able to overload the midfield.
Mm, yeah,
if you overload the midfield, possession, bang, 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 sprung the outside. I legit do think with our killers and our gunners will be our wingers. I think
I think Saka, Martinelli, and Odegaard are the whole attackers.
But if you said to me in 2 years' time, Martinelli was averaging 20 goals a season, 20 goals a season, 10 assists, and Saka 15 goals a season. Like Mane, Salah, maybe not Mane, Salah, 30-25, but like a level below. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Wouldn't be surprised. No, I agree.
So I think he just wants more of a baller in terms of up front, not more less of a stone cold killer.
Yeah, more Firmino, less Harry Kane. Well, it'd be interesting to see who he goes.
Kane started dropping deeper in the field, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was more because Spurs were fucking wank. Let's not go on to that. No, well, that's an additional before we do AOB top four, right? I watch United, I watch Spurs, and I watch the Spanners, and I just think to myself, fucking hell, they're terrible. Like they are wank. United are a team in disarray. Like for me, you've got all these great players.
Greenwood steps up.
Ignoring the side, rapey Greenwood, right? You just got a team of individuals that are playing like a bunch of cunts, and that Ralph Ragnick, he's come from teams where they're
structures and stuff.
Yeah, they've got structures in place, but there's no egos. They're all working together. It's a very collective sort of mentality. And you can't come to United, and it's a fucking team of individuals. And I just kind of like, right, they're fucking dog shit. Then you look at Spurs, and you remove Son and Kane from that team, they're fucking dog shit. And they got found out. And no, Conte.
They got found out, but they also, the thing with the Spurs, they're a threat because they got Conte. And because they played played so shit in the first half of games. And they're, I know you hate it, but they're XG and stuff like that. And the amount of shots on target was so shit, and they still managed to get wins.
Mm.
It's teeter on the edge for me. It's either one of them ones that they're so shit that the luck will run out and they'll carry on being shit, or is that they're so shit they'll get better. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know which one it is, but their luck is like, it's so shit. Like they're against Wolves away. I think Wolves are like 10 shots on target. Spurs had one. And it was like an own goal, and they won 1-0. It's like it's all been so jammy.
Yeah,
but it's like, it's, in my mind, it's like, do I think they're going to get better, or is it more like their luck will run out and they'll just be shit?
You can't polish a turd. They're fucking shit. A manager, albeit Conte, Mourinho, whoever the fuck it is, cannot fucking change that overnight. I'm sorry, the shit that they have to deal with is almost as bad as the shit that we dealt with before Arteta came. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. They have as big a bigger rebuild as big as us, and they're fucking 2 years behind us right now.
I think got worse.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
100. And I'm not saying it because I'm an Arsenal fan and Spurs are fucking cunts. They are cunts. But I'm being, with a level head, I'm being 100% serious. They have got a long fucking way to go. Whether you've got Harry Kane and Son in your team or not, who else have they got? fucking no one.
Yeah.
Yes, they've got Conte, but he needs fucking time.
He needs money as well. He needs money as well.
He's not getting
in our deepest, darkest time, though, in our deepest, darkest time, we had Martinelli, Saka, Smith Rowe.
They ain't got shit.
Yeah. So 3 years ago, when we was fucking dog shite, we had Martinelli, Saka, and Smith Rowe.
That's what we had.
They've got nothing.
To contribute to what you said there, out of those teams there, the way it's going, and obviously things can change and form dips and things go up and down. Spurs will be Spurs, and I think they'll be shit.
I think Spurs, though, are the closest ones that we are closest.
I think they're the closest challenge we have. 100%.
I think Man United will peak and fall with a team with Ronaldo in, regardless who else is in it, are always a fucking threat. And I don't give a fuck what anyone says. You got a goal scorer like that, a 40-year-old Ronaldo, you've got a chance to win games, right? Yeah, exactly. You've got a chance to win games.
Yeah. It's the Simon Newbold.
It might be against fucking Chelsea. It might be whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
West Ham are the most consistent. They are the most together.
Spanners.
Yeah. They are the most together. They are the best team in that run for the top four.
They are, but there's nothing.
What was spectacular about Leicester that won the league?
Nothing.
Apart from Vardy banging in consistently 11 goals.
And Danny Drinkwater putting them 50-yard balls in.
Where's Morgan playing like a 25-year-old?
Yeah, apart from those things, actually nothing.
That run was mental.
So West Ham for me will be our closest rivals because they are.
That's what I'm saying.
But they'll be our closest rivals because they are the most together as a team, and I think
Moyes has got a good thing going. But I do think, yeah, I have to agree. The squad is paper thin.
Yeah, paper thin. Yeah, starting 11. That's it.
That's why
they couldn't drop Zuma.
Yeah. So I think.
Jesus Christ. That's going to go really well on your pod. Perfect noises for podcasts.
You can tell it's a professionally run organisation. We need a studio.
We're trying to peck open a bottle of wine.
While someone's eating crisp.
While someone's smashing a bag of crisp. AOB, right, we're going to move on to AOB because I've got AOB. I've got some big AOB. There's two things.
Before we do AOB, top four then. I tell you what.
If we win our games in hand, we're better than Wolves.
Our games in hand are Chelsea and Liverpool.
Chelsea and Liverpool, Chelsea are not great.
I think Chelsea are beatable.
If we win our games in hand, we're 2 points behind Chelsea. 1 point behind Chelsea.
Yeah, I think Chelsea are beatable. I think Liverpool... We can possibly.
Let's be real.
Good day.
City.
On a good day.
Already done and dusted. Liverpool.
Done and dusted.
Chelsea.
Mostly.
Strong likelihood that Chelsea will finish third.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal fourth. I think West Ham fifth. And then I'm going to say Man United Spurs.
I think Spurs will finish fifth as well.
Yeah.
I think we're misunderstanding Conte.
Yeah. I don't think we are. You got
an average Chelsea team to win the title.
Yeah, he did.
Average Chelsea team, man.
He had Kante though.
You have Kante and Hazard. That was it. And just before the hill, Diogo Costa. Just before he got the hill. As soon as they won the title, he messaged them the next day saying, "You're out. You're never playing for me ever again."
That was an Alan Sugar game.
Yeah, that's class, isn't it? You just won me the Premier title, but you're never playing for me ever again.
You are a cunt. You're an elephant, man.
Bon appetit.
Yeah. It is. You opened the bottle.
I think Chelsea is right.
Here's my thing with Liverpool and Chelsea and City. To an argument, City going to win the league. That's why I've got no issues with that. They've got two or three games a week. We've got 16.
We're not catching Liverpool.
Yeah. No. Chelsea.
Liverpool, it's
very dark horse. Liverpool, it's very black beauty.
From where Spurs are in terms of Liverpool got a big rebuild ahead. But I think they're quite lucky because they've started with Diaz and Jota. They've got a rebuild coming.
Well, Well, Liverpool. Yeah, but they've already started.
They've started.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they're not mugs. They're not, their transfer policy is speaks for itself.
Because Van Dijk's like, Hendo's going. Henderson's 31, Milner's 35,
so you've got Curtis Jones.
Fabinho's 30.
There's a lad who played left wing against us.
Morton or something like that.
Yeah, he's fucking mustard when he came on. There's a lad that played right wing.
They've got Harvey Elliott as well.
They've got some young kids. I was like,
right, listen, don't fuck about. Give me your top six in order now. Go.
City.
Yeah.
Liverpool. Mm-hmm. I probably will say Chelsea third. Mm-hmm. Right? I think
sensible.
It's too big a gap.
Sensible.
But I think it's
realistic. It's realistic.
Yeah.
You're not ambitious. It's realistic.
I legit think we'll beat them at Emirates.
And that's fine. I still think they'll finish third.
Well, they'll finish third, but I will beat them.
We've got to play Chelsea at theirs.
Oh, so it's down pretty. Yeah, I think we'll beat them. I don't rate them at all. I think
they've got two games a week, and we play Chelsea late as well. Can you imagine in April when you've got all those fucking games like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, those games? They're going to have to play a weekend team. We don't. We've got 16 cup finals. That's how Arsenal have got to view it. Like, yesterday was a cup final.
Another one.
The next game, Brentford cup final.
You've done top three.
I think Arsenal can. I think Arsenal can get fourth. I think, and if not, we'll get fifth.
Fifth is the lowest.
I can't see us. The only team I can see getting above us is Spurs.
Spurs.
Just because they've got Song
and
Kane.
They've also got nothing apart from the FA Cup.
Yeah.
They're out of Europe as well.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And because they've got Son and Kane, that's all they got.
Spanners have got like a paper thin squad. They will have an injury.
And they're still in Europe.
Not much.
And their players. Right.
They'll get to a quarterfinal.
And their players are bottle jobs. Like, they've never done it.
For me, that I think City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, United, Spanish.
I have to agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think United have just got too much to be seventh.
Yeah.
But just look at that team and like, how have you got Rafa Varane in your seventh?
Yeah. This is a centre half that was like bossing it.
Champions
Madrid.
League.
Yeah.
Boss.
Okay, but
mate, all the Greenwood shit, all of that other shit.
No, so man, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Coming to fixtures where they look suicidal.
Yeah, they look miserable.
Do you know what I mean?
They look miserable.
There is something inherently wrong there, and I think it's more than we know.
David De Gea said that, didn't he?
I think it's going to fucking show. I think it's going to tell.
He's like, we must have a curse or something. I was like, no,
you can't be honest. And you got cursed.
And you can't be honest. There's obviously something going wrong.
Do you watch Roy Keane? Like, watching Roy Keane is hilarious. I love, especially when you talk about United. It's like, these players threw Ole under the bus. This Ralph Radnick guy, he's going to come in, he's fucking off in the summer. They're not us.
You're not bothered. Your players aren't bothered either.
They're getting their money. And whoever the new manager is. But it is like you say, it's a rebuild. Yeah, United. United have
got some young players, though. They've got pieces that you can make a team with.
Yeah, but it takes time, doesn't it?
You got pieces, man. If two of your midfield three is Pogba and Bruno, and up front you have, you had Greenwood. You'd be like,
Greenwood's not playing for a while.
These are legit pieces that you could have used, the emphasis. Like Bruno, Pogba and midfield. Just like, what are you doing, man? But obviously, they don't supplement the midfield. They put fucking Fred behind him and McTominay. Just go and fucking buy Bissouma. What are you doing? Go and buy another midfielder who can actually play.
What United have done, though. The United's transfer policy has been incredibly chaotic and disorganized in the sense that they've just gone, right, he's fucking porno. We'll buy him. Or he's really good. We'll buy him. No comprehension in terms of how they'll play into a team. And I think that's what Arsenal have done very well. If they've gone, right, well, this person will fit into this team.
Mm.
You know, so when Ben White and Gabriel are playing, that suits Tomiyasu perfectly. And that suits Tim.
Tomiyasu doesn't need to get on the ball much because Ben White's next
ball. Exactly, And I don't think United have certainly, they've got that with the Ronaldo. They only bought Ronaldo so City wouldn't get him. Right? Let's make no fucking bones about this. They were like, fuck, City are going to sign our best player, our Thierry Henry. City are going to sign him. We have to sign him. Yeah, that's all it was.
We stick him up front next to Mason, porno, arrogant,
rapey Greenwood.
Doesn't want to pass and has obviously got into an issue with Ronaldo, Greenwood. and we stick him next to the slowest winger in the Premier League, Jadon Sancho. You cannot beat a player one on one.
I feel sorry
in the Premier League. What he's not a winger in the Premier League.
All right, okay.
But this is one point. Like they haven't looked at the team and went like, oh, this is the player. This is where he needs to fit. He in the Premier League and the way he's playing, he's playing like a 10 position. But Sancho, they've got Bruno there. They've got Pogba.
But Sancho, I'm happy to be explained on this. So with Sancho, here's a player that done the business for, was it Dortmund? He played for a year, right? Mm-hmm. And he ran like a cunt for Dortmund, like up and down that wing. And at United, he still runs up and down that wing. You know, he's got his stats really good in terms of running because he's the only cunt running. No one else does running. But, you know, he doesn't fit into that system because it's poor transfer policy.
Poor transfer policy, but also his skill set isn't suited to that position in the Premier League. Mm. He's playing against...
Again, United?
That's on United, that's my point. He's playing against donkeys who can't run in the Bundesliga. He's now playing against fucking players like, I don't know, I'll just use an example, against Middlesbrough, playing against Jed Spence and stuff like that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? He's playing against athletes. His skill set isn't suited.
Carl Walker.
He's not fast.
Yeah.
You look at Sancho and you look at him, you think, oh, he's athletic. He's not athletic at all. He's a technical baller. So if I'm United, I look at him, I'm like, he's great on the ball. He's played fantastically well with Dortmund on the left wing, but he's got a lot of time.
Yeah,
where the Premier League doesn't get time. I'm gonna have to play him in number 10. I've got Pogba and Bruno. Also, it's gonna work.
More importantly, fuck United. Yeah. Why are we talking about United? They're gonna be nowhere near us.
A-O-B.
Fuck United.
No,
I
think they will be.
Fuck everyone else.
You think they'll be near us?
No,
I don't. I don't. I think United are a team in disarray.
There.
I think Spurs are the only competitors. I think the biggest competitors to Arsenal are Arsenal.
Spurs.
I think. Arsenal have that amazing ability of shooting themselves in the foot.
Mentally.
Yeah, and we love a red card. And it's kind of like...
Which I love. I love that as well.
Yeah.
Well, you love a red card.
I love a red card. Yeah.
Well, there's a certain... Do you know what I like at the minute? There's certain George Graham vibes about Arsenal. And there's certain early days Wenger vibes. When Arsenal, you just get loads of red cards on the early days Wenger. And it is kind of like that. There's a old video, Harry. You might have seen it. You might have seen it, man. It's like before you were born, with George Graham. They did this similar to the all or nothing thing at Arsenal. It's when Arsenal won the league in '91, and it's just after the United Arsenal brawl, right? And it was we won 1-0. That's just some fucking jammy corner, but there's literally a 21-man brawl, and everyone was slinging fists. Winterburn loved it. Punching people, Davis breaking jaws as he does, and there's they filmed the training session on the Monday afterwards, and all the players are there, and George Graham's like, you know, stop being cunts, I'll be the cunt, blah 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 blah, and it was that sort of Arsenal together, and I do get that feeling because we get some terrible decisions given against us, but I do get that feeling that Arsenal is that quite unified, everyone hates us, you know,
but we are Arsenal. Fuck everyone.
Yeah.
We haven't had that feeling. We've not had that feeling as a team, as a fan base.
For a while, yeah.
For such a long time.
I do love
that. For so long.
I do love the fact they're all similar age as well. Mostly.
That's
part of the collective.
You think back to United, when United had that golden generation of like the Scholes, the Beckhams, whatever. They're all the same age, weren't they?
You have to have something in common with the people you're playing with.
The Nevs.
You don't all have to be fucking best friends. But you have to respect each other, and you have to be fucking willing to fucking go to war.
Yeah.
And that's
I think that's what they do, though.
If someone gets fucked over, someone else is steaming in. And I'm not talking about Xhaka. Listen,
Harry loves Xhaka.
We've said it before. Xhaka is not going to take this team forward, but I like him for what he brings, and that is shithousery, and to the point where he's going to punch him in the face. But more importantly than that, there are other players now that have that Xhaka element without being complete brain-dead dickheads and going to two-foot somebody.
Yeah.
They're doing it in a way where, like, if you fucking start on him, I'm fucking coming to you. And it's all fucking handbags and it's all pushing. I just want to see it.
I
don't want someone to get laid out.
Yeah, because it winds up the fans as well. Because you saw those fans like against Wolves last night, and then we've seen it before. The fans were like annoyed at Arsenal. They genuinely fucked up at Arsenal. And it's like, good.
Yeah,
good.
And I know, do you know what? Another thing as well is that, completely, not on the side, but kind of fits in.
Arsenal always get this. Arsenal fans always get this reputation of high reliability and it's all really quiet at the Emirates. I'm not going. Fucking Arsenal away fans, mate. I'm telling you.
Also, atmosphere at Old Trafford and Anfield.
I've been to both. I've been to both, and I can tell you, categorically, at Old Trafford we outsung them, and at Anfield is overrated.
Yeah, overrated.
They have their days.
Good at the European nights.
Yeah, they have their days. Absolutely, they have their days, but they also have their days where they get outsung pretty fucking easily. I went to Old Trafford in a cup game. This was years ago. I don't know if you remember. We played United, and United had 4-4-2. But it was 8 defenders.
We lost
2-0. Right?
You went to that?
Yeah, I went to that.
John O'Shea playing like midfield or something.
Yeah, yeah. And they had one of the twins.
The twins were playing
right. And it was 8 defenders and they still beat us 2-0. It was a quarter final. I went to that. And I've been to Anfield. Every time I've been to Anfield, we've lost. And Robbie Fowler scored a hat-trick. Even when he hasn't been playing, he somehow managed to score a hat-trick. You know. But I've been to Anfield like 2-3 times. But all of those times, the atmosphere was,
I'll say the atmosphere's not bad.
Yeah, overrated. Arsenal's atmosphere, when Arsenal, and I think recently, we're a bit better, but certainly it used to be that we needed to be sort of inspired.
Mm.
You know, I think we got spoiled. We got spoiled with Henry. We got spoiled with, you know, great footballers. Certainly that's not the case now. I think it's, I think Arsenal Twitter and Arsenal actual fans are two very different fucking entities. Arsenal fans are genuinely all behind because they're all young players. And I think Arteta's quite clever on this. And I've said this on the podcast with Joe before. Arteta's gone, right, nobody's going to hate fucking Saka. Nobody's going to hate Smith Rowe.
Nope.
You know, they're all, and if they make a mistake, Martinelli, if they make a mistake, they're going to give him a pass because they're young and Arsenal fans know that, you know, with all the great players before, like your Henrys, your Vieiras, whatever, they make mistakes, but they turn out to be fucking legends. So I think Arsenal fans have got more patience than most with regard in that regard. Yeah. So Arteta's like, these people are giving me fucking time because if Saka makes a mistake, I can go, well, look, he's young. You know, like, if Martinelli makes a mistake like he did yesterday, well, he's young.
Whereas if William makes a mistake.
Yeah, he's like, he's a 32-year-old professional. We're paying him 250 grand a week. What, you know, Arteta, what are you doing signing him? William, what's wrong with you? You know, all of these things, like, they stack up, don't they? And so I think Arteta has shifted his sort of approach in terms of transfers, and that's evident this summer. He's gone, like, fuck it, get young players in, they listen to me more. Yeah, because David Luiz and William and a couple of other players,
they would have killed him though.
Yeah,
they tried to get rid of him.
And
they tried to offer him,
yeah.
But he would have lost a job on them,
yeah, yeah, he banked on them. And it just reminds me of that thing that Roy Keane was saying. He's like, if you're Ollie and you're going on the bus and you see Fred and McTominay, it's like, my job relies on these, you know. And I think Arteta had the same thing. He's like, he's looking at David Luiz and William. He's like, my job relies on these cunts, you know. Like, and so I think Arteta's shifted it and Edu shifted it, looking at the young players. And yeah, it, for me, it's, you know, obviously last night was a great result.
We're 1.5 years too early from it.
Yeah, here's the thing that I'm worried about. If we don't get top four, the reaction will be, mental. And Arsenal...
Because of... I don't know who Saka's PR person is. Whoever's talking about telling Saka to come out and saying that how he dreams of the Champions League and he really wants to play in it, it's not good because he's got all the Liverpool fans giddy. Obviously, there's rumours about Liverpool wanting him and stuff like that. That's not good. We don't need that pressure.
No, but, we probably don't. But for me, Arsenal openly said our target this year is Europe.
Didn't say top four.
No. And I think, we are in reach of top four and I think it's very achievable. But it's kind of like,
for sure, though.
Yeah, we're all teachers, aren't we? So imagine it's like you're a kid that's like, right, at the beginning of year 10, you said to him, right, if you get you'll get a B if you work hard. He's like, all right, fair enough. All right, fucking hell. And then beginning of year 11, he's on an A. And you're like, fucking hell. Like, you've worked really hard. Well done. But you're still thick as fuck. But
so you could drop down a little
bit. Yeah, you could drop down a little bit. But I tell you what, go for that A. Go for that A. Go Maverick. Right? And that's what Arsenal are. Arsenal are like, fucking hell, you know, we didn't expect to be here. We're 1 point away from fourth with 16 games to go.
No, with our games in hand,
we have to look at this situation in context to everything that's gone on previously, the start of the season and everything that's gone on since.
Yeah.
And we have to say, last year we finished eighth. The year before we finished eighth.
Yeah, yeah.
If we finish sixth, yes, we will be disappointed because top four this year is certainly within our reach. And if you think of the two out of the three teams that we've discussed that would finish above us, whether that be Spurs United, West Ham United, West Ham Spurs, there's always going to be either United or Spurs above that us if we finish sixth. And that's going to be galling. However, I'm not saying sixth is the target, but if we do finish sixth, it's a two-place improvement on last year. Now, it's difficult. You have to temper it with where we are and where we were. But I think, for me, it's somewhere in the middle. I think if we finish fifth, I think that's still a very successful season and I would take it. If you offered fifth to me now...
Oh, really?
Right, yeah. If you offered fifth to me now, I would take it from you. Right? Don't get me wrong. I want fourth. I want Champions League football. I want to be able to attract the best players. I want those fucking Wednesday, Tuesday nights again.
Mm.
It's been a long time coming.
That song.
Yeah. But if we're saying trust the process, trust these things that are going on, this is a slow grow. We've had a lot of rebuilding to do, and this summer transfer is going to be even better than the last one. Fine. Finish fifth. I think that's acceptable. But fuck me. If that's the case, and you then have the 200 mil to spend in the summer, and that is now entirely Arteta's squad, that adds more pressure because you have to finish fourth.
Yeah.
If not third. There has to be incremental increases every year. And I think six, although, yes, we'll have European football, I think would be, in most of the fans' opinions, would be a disappointment. I think fourth, if you'd have said that at the beginning of the season, would be overachievement. So I think fifth is a reasonable, realistic target still now. And I think if we do finish fifth, I think we should all be happy and we should be proud that that's what we've done. But if that is the case, then undoubtedly Champions League football, it has to be next season.
I agree, for sure. I think, you know, Arsenal certainly as a club, they plan to get top six this year.
I think if you asked them at the beginning of the season, that was the goal, wasn't it? European football,
yeah. And especially after the first three games.
Sure.
And I think Brentford, we got fucking screwed over a little bit. But certainly with the other two, you know, after that international break. And if you look at the international break since then, we're third in the league. Mm. Yeah, like our form has been fantastic. And so it would be disappointing. I think what it would be, yeah, from an optimistic point of view, it'd be disappointing if we didn't get fourth simply because our form has been that of someone that should be third or fourth.
Mm.
You know, us ignoring those last three games, the first three games.
Yeah.
You know, our form has been, you know, we've played a lot of the good teams, away from home, City, Liverpool, you know. So I think that's what it would be. But yeah, no, for me, if European football, but I agree with your point 100%, Nick. Next year, but if by the end of next season, if we're not in the Champions League, then I think Arteta, because you're right, it's Arteta's squad. And this summer, he's going to have 200 million or however much he's going to have to spend. And I think Kroenke will back him. I think Kroenke will back because he can see the progress that's developing at Arsenal. And I think it'll be a case of, right, you've got no fucking issues now. This is your team. This is how you do.
Exactly. I think to summarise, fourth, I'd be over the moon. Fifth, I'd be happy. Sixth, I would be satisfied.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't mean the fucking Conference League.
Anything less than six, and I'm saying
I'm going to struggle to see both.
You fucked it, basically.
Yeah, like West Ham, Spurs, United. Two of them being above us.
No, not Spurs and United. Anyway.
Okay, cool. Right. Well, I think that will... Emmanuel, have you got anything else you'd like to add?
Fuck United. I'll be Arsenal.
Okay, lovely. All right.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, cool. no guests, or maybe we have. I just didn't turn the comments on. I don't really know what I'm doing, to be fair.
Doubtful.
It's, well, no, we get a lot of Indian comments. Indian, yeah. Yeah, bizarrely, we get a few people from India. I don't know why we get people.
Because it's 9 o'clock and they don't want to, are you still on?
Yeah, still on.
It's 9 o'clock.
In India? No, India's only like 2 hours behind China.
What's like the Indian massive?
No, too, you get bizarre. Lots of Indian gooners. Right, cool. All right, well, unless we've got nothing else to say, lovely. All right, see you later.